Comments about massless representations of extended CZ in general that we've basically seen in looking at the representations, various features, and I just want to draw your attention to them. So as we saw, each time we apply a Q or a Q bar, we can raise the spin by a half, and if we have n supersymmetries, the maximum number of times we can do that for a massless representation is n over 2. And so the difference between the maximum and minimum helicities in a supermultiplet is n over 2. That's one comment. In quantum field theory, actually, if you want a renormalizable theory, you need the helicities of your states to be less than or equal to 1. Okay, so if you want or if you want your multiplet to satisfy this condition, then you can see that from the previous difference between the maximum and minimum helicity, the maximum number of supersymmetries you're going to want is 4. Okay, but as you know, we sometimes deal with quantum field theories that are non-renormalizable, so we can consider higher n. But even then, there's a strong belief that there's no massless particles. There are no massless particles with spin greater than, or helicity greater than 2. And this, you can look at Weinberg quantum field theory book, chapter 13.1, or Grisaru and Pendleton from 77. But basically, it comes from the observation that at low momentum, there are no conserved currents for such large helicities. And so, you know, it doesn't look like there's a low momentum limit. But, you know, for example, for a lambda equals 2, we do have conserved currents. We have NG momentum tensor, and you know, in QED we have the usual current divergence of the current in 0, etc. No, it's a conserved current. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's basically a one-to-one correspondence, because what happens is you couple that to the graviton, right? So in the Lagrangian, if you have a sort of linearized graviton, it couples in that way to the energy, to the conserved current. That's how you do the gauge theory, and you get a conserved current coupling to the vector field. It's the same in QED, you know, you get J mu A mu. Okay. So usually there's a conserved current, there's one-to-one correspondence with some massless particle, And you don't get that in the low momentum limit for velocities greater than 2. So, I mean, it's not a proof, but there's a strong belief that that those theories don't make any sense. I don't know actually, you'd have to go and have I haven't checked out the references.
No, I don't know.
Sorry. Yeah.
So if we were labeling our state with a poor state, when we're going to go on and break supersymmetry, we're going to, you know, when our particle gets mass, it's going to be able to hit a bunch of the velocity states. So do we, when we break, are we going to have a bunch of extra states that appear in the way?
No, there's a conservation of the number of degrees of freedom, and you already see that actually in Higgs mechanism, just in the plain old Higgs mechanism in the standard model. So let's consider the W and Z bosons, right? So before symmetry breaking, those Ws only have 2 polarization states because they're massless, so they've just got helicities plus or minus 1, and then they eat the Higgs, right? So that one of the scalar degrees of freedom goes to form the longitudinal modes. And it's the same deal with Susie breaking. There's a conservation of degrees of freedom, number of degrees of freedom.
We're going to add someone.
Yeah. And in fact, yeah, that's right. So when you break Susie, typically, yeah. Yeah, there's a Goldsteino, which is a spin a half copy of the Goldstone boson, and so on. Okay, so if we say, right, we're not going to allow any larger helicities, that means that n is less than or equal to 8. Okay, and if you actually if you play with higher n than that, you start getting several gravitons. And if they're massless, they're going to, you know, that's going to be ruled out. Then we deal with one gravity force. So I had a look yesterday, after your questions about you know, the number of supersymmetries, I had a look in the literature, and people do write papers about n equals 3 and you know, odd n. Not many people do, and it tends to have been back in the 80s. So I think probably there's nothing wrong with n equals 3, 5, 7. But string theories and so on tend to have n equals 8, and then when you break it, you tend to break half of them. And so that's why people are more interested in n equals 8, n equals 4, 2, and 1. All right, and then there's another observation that for bigger than n bigger than 1 supersymmetry, the supermultiplets are non-chiral. So as you know, the standard model needs chiral reps. Also, actually, for n bigger than 1, all reps apart from all of the supermultiplets apart from the n equals 2 hypermultiplet contain a spin 1 particle, helicity 1. So they must be in the adjoint. So all particles in that supermultiplet must be in the adjoint of the internal of an internal symmetry group. This hypermultiplet isn't chiral either, so only n equals 1 and n equals 0, in other words, no supersymmetry, has chiral supermultiplets. So, okay, this doesn't mean actually that you couldn't build a theory, a field theory with, say, n equals 2 that that contains the standard model. What you'd have to do is double the particle content. For every left-handed doublet, you'd also have a right-handed doublet, and for every right-handed singlet, you'd have a left-handed singlet, and then somehow you'd have to arrange for the wrong ones to be made heavy. Okay. So, it's not a no-go theorem, but surely the simplest way to build a model with chiral for chiral fermions in it is actually just to use n equals 1 or n equals 0. Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure this has been invented.
Oh, I see.
But this is often quoted as a no-go theorem, and you should always be a bit cautious. You can build models which contain standard model particle content and a load more in n equals 2. And then your problem is going to be precisely how do you get half the states to become heavy. And I think there are some models. I think some of these orbifold constructions in extra dimensions do that. They project out the, half the chirality of the states somehow. No, they are quantum field theories. So they're just quantum field theories on an orbifold. Yeah. You have to look in more detail. Okay, so now we're going to go on to another topic. So we've done massless representations of n greater than 1, and now we're going to do massive representations. So much of this follows what we've done before, so I'm getting faster each time we do it because you're going to get bored, stupid. But there's an important difference here with the massive representations, which we're going to look into. So again, we know what our four momentum is. We just go on mass shell. So we know what our anti-commutation relation is. 2m, 0, 0, alpha, beta, dot, delta, ab. And we remember that the ZABs now are not necessarily 0. But if we let's consider the case to start with where they are 0. So now we have 2n raising and lowering operators. So the lowering operators are the q's, and the raising ones are the q bars. So remember that in the massless states, the q alphas, or half of these raising operators weren't there. So we get double the number of states, basically. So before we had 2 to the n states, and now we have 4 to the n states. So each one now we get the superspin, the third component of the superspin going from plus y to minus y in integer steps. Okay, in analogy with the spin. So, of course, we know it's 4 to the n because we have of these cue bars. Okay, so sorry. Well, it's just double the number of massless states. So, for example, again, n equals 2, y equals 0. We start off with our spin 0 state, and then we act on it with a raising operator. And then you can act on it with two raising operators. This has three spin 0 and three spin 1 particles in it, with four gamma dots A, B, C, diagonal. Four times spin half. And finally, we can act with four raising operators in only one way. So the only difficult counting here is this one. We know there are going to be six states, okay? Because alpha and beta can go from 1 to 2. A and B can go from 1 to n. Okay, so there's we've got n equals 2. So we've got four of these, each of these things, but is they anti-commute, so it's like a 4x4 anti-symmetric matrix, and that's got six components in it. Okay, so we know there's going to be six states, and then it's just the decomposition between spin 0 and spin 1 that's a bit more tricky, and you have to consider the Lorentz structure of these spinners. You know that they're both right-handed doublet. So you can look in Licken's notes to find out why you get that spin decomposition. Okay, fine. So there are 16 states there if you add them up, and indeed that is 4 to the n. So sixteen states. So we have eight fermions and eight bosons. So quick check, number of bosons equals number of fermions. We can write 4 to the n as 2 to the 2n, and that's because we have 2n raising operators, and we can apply each of them either 0 times or 1 time. Okay, so there's binary choice, and the total number of states is going to be 2 to the 2n. Okay, z, let's take this other case now, where we don't have zero central charges, we have non-zero ones. So now we get some special multiplets, which are different. And what I'm going to do is just define some weird object, and then we're going to derive, using that weird mathematical object, a bound on the mass of these states. Okay, so define this weird looking thing. It's not as scary as it looks, actually. It's actually pretty easy to work with. and this will be your your tutorial today, I think, will be to complete this proof, which isn't that long. So we know that this thing is bigger than or equal to zero because it's just the sum. It's the sum of terms which look like some operator A times the Hermitian conjugate of A. Okay. Bar means Hermitian conjugate, of course. So we define the gammas in this way. So now, UAB, so use a unitary matrix, member of UN. Yeah.
Is that the central charge in set?
Yeah. The algebra is different, right? Because when it's zero, we just have n copies of the n equals one Susi algebra. But when it's non-zero, then the q's, these lowering operators don't anticommute. There's a non-trivial anticommutation relation, and the q bars also don't anticommute completely. Actually, we're about to work out what happens to the representations. Weirdly, this is what this thing's going to tell us or help with. So I'll tell you in a sec. It's double the spectrum because, remember, in the massless case, you get a zero in the top left, right? So the Q1s and Q-bar-1s don't do anything. They annihilate the state. So you've got like half the number of raising and lowering operators. So you get 2 to the n states for the massless case, and it's 4 to the n for the massive. And in the massless case, you only have helicities and minus helicities, whereas in this case, you've got the full spectrum of the, because it's a massive particle, you can take from spin j to spin minus j and integer steps for each one of these guys. Okay. So this is a massless. So here we have three massive spin 1 bosons. So their spin states are plus 1, 0, and minus 1. All right, so it'll be your tutorial. In the tutorial, you just calculate these anticommutators, okay? So you know what the anticommutator of Q and Q bar is from the algebra. And in fact, these other terms also contain that anticommutator. And what you'll see is this curly H is 8 times the mass of the state times n minus 2. Trace of z u dagger plus u z dagger. Okay, and here that's bigger than or equal to 0. So I have to tell you what z is. No, I don't. Okay, sorry. Z, do you know what z is? So z is a matrix, it's just the zabs, okay? So this is a trace in the number of Susis. Yeah.
Actually, two questions. First is the UAB just a unitary matrix?
Yeah.
And second, if we why do we have a bar on a sigma if it's just zero? Isn't sigma zero?
Yeah. Yeah. It's convention. You're right. And this is really just only one when both of these things are one, right? But it's just a convention because the barred sigmas have the dotted index first and the undotted second, whereas the unbarred are the other way around. So it's just to be consistent with that. It's not so important, it's just a notational thing.
So, if we're just defining this weird corner of the page, why don't we just start from the line at the bottom?
The line at the bottom. Well, because we don't know that it's bigger than or equal to zero. That's why. Because it's that inequality that we're going to use now. Okay, so now we're going to use the polar decomposition theorem. On the matrix Z. So Z can be defined as the product of two matrices. One is Hermitian matrix. So it's Hermitian, therefore it has positive eigenvalues, and V is a unitary phase matrix, or unitary matrix, containing the other phases. So polar decomposition theorem says you can, for a square matrix, you can always do that decomposition. Real and positive, right? Or positive semi-definite. That's right, isn't it? They can be negative. Let me see. You're right. Real eigenvalues, yeah, you're right. Usually they've got both positive and negative eigenvalues. Okay, so you can take, as the physical limit, you can take just the positive ones in some situations. Okay. Now we choose. So this is true, okay, this is true for any unitary matrix that we then care to write in there. Okay, so we can just choose it how we wish, as long as it's unitary. And so we choose our unitary matrix to be equal to this V that appears in the polar decomposition theorem. And just substitute it in. 8mn minus 4 times the trace of h is bigger than or equal to 0. So h is this Hermitian matrix. And, of course, h squared is zz dagger, okay? So I'm going to write, that's just from this equation. So I'm going to write h in a notation. You'll often see it like this, as root zz dagger. Okay. So m is bigger than or equal to 1 over 2n trace root zz dagger. That's what we wanted to get to for these states. This is called the BPS bound. Bogomolny, Prasad, and Sommerfeld came up with this bound for extended It's easy multiplets with central charges. And the saturated states, the states that saturate the bound with the equal sign, are called BPS states. And they have special properties, which we're about to see, in terms of the, you know, how many particles they have in there. Supermultiplets. So we notice that for states that saturate this bound, curly H is zero. So curly H is zero. It's not very easily readable, that chalk, is it? That's a little white chalk here. That's good. So that's, when curly H is zero, that means that Q alpha A minus gamma alpha A is zero. So as we know, this is just like a constraint on the Q alphas. When, for the massless states, we had Q alpha A is zero, right, for some of the alphas. And this equation reduces the number of independent states in a supermultiplet. Similar to the massless case. Where Q2A was zero. Okay, so this means that in that case we actually have 2 to the n states rather than 2 to the 2n. In other words, BPS multiplets are shorter. So let's take an example, n equals 2. So the ZABs are anti-symmetric, okay? Cause, so there's only one possible form of the ZABs. The diagonal entries have to be 0 through anti-symmetry. And you can have some value for the 1, 2 entry. And you've got to have the negative value for the 2, 1. Okay, so now if we use our BPS bound, so we can tell something about the mass of this state. It has to be bigger than or equal to half the central charge from our BPS bound. So you form ZZ dagger and take the square root of it. So for n bigger than 2, but even, we can change basis. Of the Zs. So we can write ZAB is some unitary matrix AC times Z tilde CD so we can change basis to this Z tilde. And as a general, there's a general proof that Z tilde, you can make it look like the following. So it just looks like a bunch of n equals 2 Zs. with zeros everywhere else. Okay. If n is odd, then you get an extra row and column. Of zeros, turns out. So what we see is that the BPS conditions hold block by block for each of these two by two blocks. BPS bound holds in this change in the change basis. Block by block. So M is bigger than or equal to each of the QIs over 2. So maybe some of the QIs satisfy the BPS bound and some of them don't. So then there are 2n minus 2k raising operators so there are two n minus k states in the multiplet and k, of course, is less than or equal to n over 2. So, if we have k is 0, in other words, there are no BPS states, then we just get an ordinary long multiplet of extended massive CZ. So, this is called a long multiplet. If k is intermediate, so it's bigger than 0, but it's less than n over 2, then we get our 2 to the 2 n minus k states. That's a short multiplet. And if k equals n over 2, then we just get 2 to the 2 n states, and it's an ultra short. It's called ultra short. Multiplet. And I understand, so this is a proper, fully BPS state, and they're useful for mathematical proofs, yeah, in ADS-CFT and stuff.
You probably said this, is it obvious that Qs are positive numbers?
Well, if they're not, I mean, then you can just, there's always a minus, yeah, I mean, you can define the basis to, you know, define the top one as positive, but it doesn't really matter, of course. Yep. I mean, saturate. Sorry, yep. If they saturate the bound. Yes. I'm sorry. So your
Cauchy equation where we have two n of these equations, q alpha is minus.
Yeah, but they're not all independent.
But how do you reduce it to 2 to the power n states?
This is, okay, there are actually n independent equations here because the gammas contain q's as well. Okay, so there's like, this looks like two n equations, but actually because this contains q's, there's actually only n independent equations. So we reduce the number of raising operators to n. Okay, independent raising operators. And again, you can apply each of them 0, 1 times. So it's like a binary number with n digits, yeah, n bits. So, yeah, some remarks on this. Sorry? Is there another question? What am I? Sorry, yeah, it is. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so remarks. The BPS states and bounds actually come from solitonic solutions of super Young Mills. Systems. So solitons are like, you know, vortices, monopoles, that kind of thing. They're finite energy solutions of the classical field equations. The classical equations of motion. And if you view it from that point of view, the bound, the BPS bound, then comes from an energy bound on the system that you can prove. So they're useful, well, there's a connection with monopole physics. The BPS states are stable. So again, they're important. Because they hang around, since they're the lightest centrally charged particles, and we know that there's a symmetry, there's an R symmetry associated with the central charges. And so the central charge is conserved, and so you can only ever decay into lighter states, okay, kinematically. And so if you've got one with charge, it's got nowhere else to go. It's got no, the lightest state with charge can't decay. Yeah.
How do we know that the M that you wrote in the definition of H has anything to do with mass?
I'm sorry? Because you're going to find that out. It comes from the anti-commutation of the Q in relation to the Q and Q bars, right, which involves P mu. And we know what P mu is for our massive states. So you just substitute that in. But you'll find out this afternoon.
The central charges, Z, which then turn out to be the charges of instantons or solitons. So they are charges which do not come from any Noether's theorem, but from topological charge.
Conditions. Okay. And then I'm told that extremal black holes. Well, this is far outside my expertise. These are BPS solutions. of supergravity theories, supergravity, and actually the equivalence, equivalence for the BPS states between mass and charge, central charge, is reminiscent. Of black holes. Okay. Their BPS states are important for understanding dualities. Weak or strong. Weak strong coupling dualities. In quantum field theory and in string theory. And finally, there are some objects in string theory which are important and which you've probably heard about. Yeah.
What's an extreme
of that? It's one for which there's a relation between the mass and the and some charges, I think. Is that right? Yeah.
In certain units, Q is equal to M, the extreme horizon or strong black hole.
So in string theory, the extended objects called D-brains, these are objects, they satisfy Dirichlet boundary conditions. They can be sort of big hyperplanes through the extended space. These are our BPS states. So, you know, these states crop up a lot in, more formal studies, string theory and other quantum field theories. Yeah.
I think it's probably technically correct thing to say would be that supersymmetric
D-brains are in super strings. Okay, the extended CZ objects. Okay, good. So that's it for today. Next time we go on to develop superspace and superfields, where we'll actually see explicitly how we start writing down these multiplets for n equals 1 CZ. So you said the second in your email to me. So it's Good Friday, Bad Wednesday this Wednesday. By the way, I don't know if any of you are into classical music, but on Wednesday night there's a concert in Perimeter. There's this guy, Steve Isalis, who's like a mega brilliant, famous cellist. It's amazing they've got him to come. But yeah, I recommend you go. I'm going to go. I recommend you go. Yeah. He's amazing.